Hey now, I'm Kenya.
Yo, I'm Kendra.
We're twins, we love music, and this is another special episode of The Tapes. Hey guys, welcome to another special detour from our regular tapes road trip. In this episode, we're going to talk about the idea of revolution, peaceful protest, good trouble, participation in the democratic process, and the music behind a movement we've witnessed in motion since the Jim Crow era. We'll examine the past to understand our present, but also we'll try to peer into the future being sung to us by contemporary musical activists, both mainstream artists and independent, everyday citizen activists who are also artists, some of whom we'll feature here in this episode. Before we get started talking about the music, though, let me keep it really real with y'all. We're sure you understand, these last few months have been extremely difficult to deal with in a lot of ways. But there's a few things I want to say now that we're back. There's a reason this episode is happening right now. It's the perfect time to put this out there.
There's a very consequential election right now, literally.
People across the country have already been casting ballots. They are being met with continued, blatant, drastic voter suppression efforts. These efforts have purged voter rolls and rejected and sent back ballots of mostly low-income, black and brown Democratic voters. They've closed down polling locations, ballot drop-off locations, and severely handicapped the Postal Service's ability to securely deliver these ballots where they need to go in a timely manner. These are institutions that are so crucially needed in order to make sure our voices are heard. There are viral videos showing mostly people of color standing in long lines and waiting and crawling caravans for hours on end just to cast a ballot. And that's not right. In response to this, the disenfranchised are going above and beyond to make sure our voices are heard, despite the overwhelming odds against us. It could be argued that what's happening now is revolutionary action to fight against these efforts. Efforts that include the dog whistle support of racist, white supremacists, domestic terrorists who really believe that this country belongs to them and only them. They'll murder innocent citizens, plot to kidnap and overthrow politicians, threaten and harass protesters, and stalk polling locations, all on Donald Trump's wink and a nod leniency. These things are happening in our country. The news is wild. There are literally raging wildfires on top of a ravaging pandemic that the powers that be have absolutely no interest in stopping from decimating our climate, population, and economy. Politicians are openly embracing racism and racist attacks. All the while, there has been a groundswell of activism, organizing, and protests that serve to push back against terrorism. We've already voted by mail here in Los Angeles, and we urge anyone who might be listening to do the same wherever you are if you live in the U.S. We're going to put information about voting on our website, but you can also go to iwillvote.com right now for information about how you can participate in our democracy. It's important. Okay, let's get started.
While my time here has now come to an end, I want you to know that in the last days and hours of my life, you inspired me. You filled me with hope about the next chapter of the great American story when you used your power to make a difference in our society. Millions of people motivated simply by human compassion laid down the burdens of division. Around the country and the world, you set aside race, class, age, language, and nationality to demand respect for human dignity. That is why I had to visit Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington. I just had to see and feel it for myself that after many years of silent witness, the truth is still marching on.
We may be witnessing an historic level of awareness and solidarity through the multi-class, multicultural support of the Black Lives Matter movement right now, but we must acknowledge the cyclical nature of this ongoing fight. We hear all the time that history repeats itself, but are we really paying attention? Have we come full circle for the last time, finally, or is our society doomed to be caught in the middle of an endless cycle?
You might think these questions have little to do with music, but in this episode, I mean, we kind of beg to differ. Music has always been essential to the movement. Expressing political and social unrest through song is an American legacy.
Yeah. Protest music has always been a refuge, but also a call to arms. Music is political by virtue of its personal nature. Countless musicians in our history and our present are also activists. Maybe they didn't gather in a church or community center or march down the street, but they have always expressed their political unrest and solidarity with the communities they claim in one form or another. Those who've gone further than personal observation have created rallying cries for their listeners, their music becoming a vessel through which important themes and messages coming out of the movement could be disseminated to broader America.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's also, obviously, music evolves with the times, but it's not just because we transition from, like, fuck the police to it's gonna be all right and this is America, you know, and Jim Crow years it was gospel and call and response chants sort of, like, embedded into this, these sort of choruses from gospel music that were really sort of speaking to the times. And, you know, you translate that to today, it's it's sort of like the reversal or, like, the opposite. So it's like now it's say her name and no justice, no peace. And that kind of thing finds its way from the streets to the courses of hip hop and folk songs instead of the other way around.
Yeah. Most, if not all, variations of Black American music is political, especially today. When our society struggles to reconcile the fact that Black people are shaping our collective culture more than ever before, while at the same time still being subjected to some of the worst economic, social, and political oppression we've faced since, well, Reconstruction, I'll say, but specifically Jim Crow. Black music has always been in defiance of what society at large believes about us, and we're exploring that a bit in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to unpack, but we can do it. I mean, you know, we can try and do it. We're mostly sticking to the music, obviously, because that's what the blog is about. But specifically, we want to talk about the numerous parallels and throwbacks and lessons inside of this music and what, if anything, we've learned from it personally and as a society.
Yeah, so with that in mind, we curated a special set of mixes to discuss during this episode, spanning generations of protest music from the 60s to the early aughts and this year, 2020. There's been a lot of music released by artists who have wanted to speak to specifically the countless horrors that have been visited upon us by the government and the police. This year, 2020 alone, has been like a shit show for that. So there's plenty of protest music to choose from. And I just keep jumping back to the question, what have we learned from this music and the artists who make it from the struggle? This has been a struggle that is generational. Is it possible to win this fight in our lifetime? And like John Lewis has asked, if not now, then when?
And what does the future, like, of protest and protest music even look like with the media landscape changing so dramatically and rapidly every year, like every moment of every year? So, you know, we can't predict the future, but we'll attempt to read the tea leaves, if you allow, in this music and do our very best anyway.
Like so many young people today, I was searching for a way out, or some might say a way in. And then I heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on an old radio. He was talking about the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. He said we are all complicit when we tolerate injustice. He said it is not enough to say it will get better by and by. He said each of us has a moral obligation to stand up, and speak out. When you see something that is not right, you must say something. You must do something. Democracy is not a state. It is an act, and each generation must do its part to help build what we call the beloved community, a nation and world society at peace with itself. Ordinary people with extraordinary vision can redeem the soul of America by getting in what I call good trouble, necessary trouble.
Like we just mentioned, we believe that Black music has always been rebel music. I mean, that's a fact. America was founded on racism. Ask Native Americans. Slaves were used for labor as well as capital. Throughout America's aging, it has engaged in various forms of oppression against its Black citizens, its minority citizens, period, but especially its Black citizens. And what is one of the most enduring ways our people have coped with generations of trauma at the hands of our oppressors?
Music.
Music.
Because it's our shared experiences, and that's timeless. It's always going to be the way that we communicate with each other and to the world about our trauma.
Right. I mean, I think that Black people and our collective culture, we're not a monolith, but culturally, no matter what we do, there's always some element of defiance in our being who we are through our art and through our the way we dress, the way we talk, the way we wear our hair. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about protest music, you know, what do we mean? Yes, we mean the spirituals that the Freedom Riders sang on the bus in the streets, but we also mean any music offering observation or commentary on the epic struggle between the haves and the have-nots. And usually the have-nots are us. So illuminating the hardships of an impoverished upbringing, being over-policed, and having your civil liberties violated on the daily. The many, many traps the government has laid to keep Black Americans firmly under the second class and lower, quite frankly, glass ceiling. This music that we deem protest music is our way culturally of making lemonade out of those rotten ass lemons that we got, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not always about the struggle, but it is always about sort of this longing for freedom. And this sort of, you
know, freedom through equality.
Yeah, freedom through equality, but also being able to not only dream up, but demand bigger and better. And, you know, even when you're not paying attention to the messages in some of the music that we listen to make ourselves feel better, even if we're just digging the vibe, we're sort of hearing from these artists about how they feel. You know, there's always the fuck the police. And, you know, Tupac didn't think we were ready to see a Black president. And, you know... And then we have Bob Marley saying we're going to be burning and looting tonight, you know. But we also have The Clash saying, no, you're motherfucking right. And we have Bono and U2 howling in pain over Sunday, Bloody Sunday. Like, and all of this stuff, like, the humanity in it is what connects it and what makes it, like, the same type of music. Won't you tell everybody what the fuck you gotta say? Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad because I'm brown.
I mean, I don't think anyone ever says that protest music is solely a Black American, Black cultural thing. I do think that, like with a lot of things, we planted the seed for what would probably be known as protest music. Because basically, when you have people singing songs in the field in order to take their minds off of the horrible pain and trauma of being enslaved and being forced to work in a hot-ass field under threat of an overseer, you know, singing those spirituals or trying to hold on to and pass down their, you know, traditions from Africa, an Africa that they are, you know, having to fight to remember and to pass on to their seeds before they're sold off to somebody else. I mean, so all of that to say, no, Black people don't have the cornerstone on protest music. But like with most things, we planted the seed for it. So, you know, now you have somebody like one of my favorite bands, you know, Muse, coming along and being like, you know, we got to rise up, like that. They are all about anti-fascism in their music. And, you know, you have my baby Hozier coming around and he's like, excuse me, Jack Boot Jump, get your boot off my neck. And acknowledging that boot is coming down, like we said before in the last episode, there's more of us than there are of them. And when there's more of us than there are of them, their answer to that is brute force. Mm-hmm. And so we must be doing something right to scare them enough to get them to go into violence. They are the violent ones. After George Floyd died and a leader like Al Sharpton comes to the pulpit and he says in his eulogy, get your knee off my neck.
He was murdered.
You know, in the streets for George Floyd and for Eric Garner. And we cry, I can't breathe. You know, this is our reality. And so we definitely live and feel this pain viscerally, I think. And that's why when people think about protest music, it's usually a Black fist in the air that they're thinking about.
George Floyd's story has been the story of Black folks. Because ever since 401 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted and dreamed to be in is you kept your knee on our neck. We were smarter than the underfunded schools you put us in, but you had your knee on our neck. We could run corporations and not hustle in the street, but you had your knee on our neck. We had creative skills. We could do whatever anybody else could do. But we couldn't get your knee off our neck. What happened to Floyd happens every day in this country, in education, in health services, and in every area of American life. It's time for us to stand up in George's name and say, get your knee off our necks.
Sure. This is music that you can bump at a block party. Like, you can bump Kendrick's We Gonna Be All Right at a block party, but it's made to chant at a protest. It's a rallying
Coming
cry.
Together.
It's, and
yeah.
it's also a prayer. It's also a way to cope, to heal, you know, a way to cry, to express emotion. Even when the music isn't speaking directly to an issue or a movement, even when it's just people talking about the what they had to go through to get to where they are, that in itself, I feel like, is a form of protest, because you're putting out there for the masses
that despite all the odds.
Exactly. For, you know, like, you're making popular
us.
The parable of your pain.
That's what one of the things that really annoys me about this whole, oh, pull yourself by your bootstraps. Ooh. Like, if black people aren't like the fucking epitome of that whole bootstrap bullshit, like, if you just think about even like what people are finally learning about Tulsa and, like, you know, all the other different and the history of Central Park and all the other different ways in which black people's efforts to create a sustainable, enriched community unto ourselves has been fucking destroyed and ruined by racism and jealousy and all this other bullshit. Like, man, ugh. Like, that's why we have things like music, like protest music, to tell the story of the broken contract between oppressed Americans in general, but definitely black Americans and the powers that be. And, you know, these motherfucking dusty old white dudes, they never intended to include us in the all men are created equal bit, you know?
That part.
And as long as we've been fighting and as long as we've been shouting this, you know, to the heavens through this song and through our protests and the placement of our bodies in harm's way, you know, it's still ongoing, you know, like,
ask ourselves why in this country in 2020 the financial gap between poor blacks and the rest of the world is at such a distance that people feel like their only hope and only opportunity to get some of the things that we flaunt and flash in front of them all the time is to walk through a broken glass window and get it. That they are so hopeless that getting that necklace, getting that TV, getting that change, getting that bed, getting that phone, whatever it is that they're gonna get, is that in that moment when the riots happen and if they present an opportunity of looting, that's their only opportunity to get it. We need to be questioning that. Why are people that poor? Why are people that broke? Why are people that food insecure, that clothing insecure, that they feel like their only shot, that they are shooting their shot by walking through a broken glass window to get what they need? And then people want to talk about, well, there's plenty of people who pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and got it on their own. Why can't they do that? Let me explain to you something about economics in America. We must never forget that economics was the reason that black people were brought to this country. We came to do the agricultural work in the South and the textile work in the North. Do you understand that? If I right now decided that I wanted to play Monopoly with you, and for 400 rounds of playing Monopoly, I didn't allow you to have any money, I didn't allow you to have anything on the board, I didn't allow for you to have anything. And then we played another 50 rounds of Monopoly, and everything that you gained and you earned while you were playing that round of Monopoly was taken from you. That was Tulsa, that was Rosewood. Those are places where we built black economic wealth, where we were self-sufficient, where we owned our stores, where we owned our property, and they burned them to the ground. So that's 450 years. So for 400 rounds of Monopoly, you don't get to play at all. Not only do you not get to play, you have to play on the behalf of the person that you're playing against. You have to play and make money and earn wealth for them, and then you have to turn it over to them. So then for 50 years, you finally get a little bit and you're allowed to play. And every time that they don't like the way that you're playing, or that you're catching up, or that you're doing something to be self-sufficient, they burn your game. They burn your cards. They burn your Monopoly money. And then finally at the release and the onset of that, they allow you to play and they say, okay, now you catch up. Now at this point, the only way you're gonna catch up in the game is if the person shares the wealth, correct? Then there's psychological warfare against you to say, oh, you're an equal opportunity hire. So if I played 400 rounds of Monopoly with you and I had to play and give you every dime that I made, and then for 50 years, every time that I played, if you didn't like what I did, you got to burn it like they did in Tulsa and like they did in Rosewood. How can you win? How can you win? You can't win. The game is fixed. So when they say, why do you burn down the community? Why do you burn down your own neighborhood? It's not ours. We don't own anything. There's a social contract that we all have that if you steal or if I steal, then the person who is the authority comes in and they fix the situation. But the person who fixes the situation is killing us. So the social contract is broken. You broke the contract. You broke the contract when for 400 years we played your game and built your wealth. You broke the contract when we built our wealth again on our own by our bootstraps in Tulsa and you dropped bombs on us. When we built it in Rosewood and you came in and you slaughtered us. You broke the contract. As far as I'm concerned, they could burn this bitch to the ground and it still wouldn't be enough. And they are lucky that what black people are looking for is equality and not revenge.
I think probably this is one of the reasons why 2020 is such a lightning in a bottle kind of moment. And this year, we said this in the last episode, but because people are sitting at home, you know, or most people are sitting at home, except for the ones who are forced to be out there risking their lives because they don't have any choice because they're impoverished and they need to work.
And the idiots.
Yeah, and those fucking idiot-ass Trump supporters. That's neither here nor there. But so this year in particular, I think, is a moment where we're seeing so many people just fed up and disgusted. I think Donald Trump definitely was not the first of his ilk, but he's definitely the sort of spearhead for the rest of this toxic waste human beings to show their true fucking colors, quite frankly. Now, white people are sitting at home and they're looking at these things and they're feeling some type of way and now they want to join in, and black people are saying, okay, white people, you're paying attention now, so you know it's time to go to work, it's time for real fucking change in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, maybe protest music is limiting, maybe it should just be considered revolution music, because I feel like we're in the midst of the beginnings of a real revolution. Okay, so I made the revolution mixtape and split it into four parts. We're going to talk about a couple of songs from each of these eras of protest music. So there's a mixture of things here that we want to sort of soundtrack a revolution, one that we feel might be on the horizon, quite frankly, after the way 2020's been going. Mm-hmm. So we're going to dive into these tracks and just talk about why we selected the ones we have here from each era and what they mean to us personally. Okay. First song we're talking about is We Shall Overcome. It's a gospel song and it's a protest song and it's an anthem for the civil rights movement. It has a long storied history. The first iteration of it was a hymn called I'll Overcome Someday, first published in the 1900s. It's since gone on to be recorded multiple times by multiple artists. Guy Carawan, I think, is the first artist, a folk artist, who recorded for the gospel civil rights era. And it was Seeger's version, I believe. And it was for nonviolent civil rights activism. And it became the movement's unofficial anthem. And the one that we have on our Revolution playlist, Volume 1 for this era of music, is the Mahalia Jackson version. It's a gospel song. It's a beautiful song. And I guess what it means to me personally is I really do look at it as that Martin Luther King, nonviolent, peaceful, gospel-rooted civil rights anthem. And that's the part, it kind of saddens me and it inspires me at the same time, because it is saying we're going to overcome these hardships. And this song was written in the 1900s and sung in the 1960s, and this is 2020. And a song like this can feel dated and out of place, but it's still, if you're a person like me with a heart that is hopeful, this song is what immediately comes to mind when you think about what we want to see for the future of our Black people and this country. The next song we're talking about is Freedom Trilogy, or Oh Freedom. It was recorded by Odetta during the Civil Rights Movement. It is called a post-Civil War African-American freedom song. She recorded it as a part of something called a spiritual trilogy, and it is on her Odetta Sings Ballads and Blues album. She's recorded that album with Joan Baez. And they sang it together in 1963 on the March on Washington. And this song is just what I think about when you have people who are saying, we're still not free here in this country. We are not free citizens in this country. We live in a police state. There are some instances where you can, you know, get justice and have your rights upheld if you go through the system, if they allow you to, but really, we're not free. That could be really what we face as people in this country until the end of time. Till the end of time. When will this war be over? The next song is I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. It's a jazz song that was originally written by Billy Taylor and Dick Dallas, and they first recorded it in 1963 for the Right Here, Right Now album on Capitol Records. It has since been transformed into a civil rights anthem and re-recorded by Nina Simone for her Silk and Soul album in 1967. And this song, I guess, is kind of around the time of Nina Simone. It's a jazz song, but she turned this into a civil rights anthem, as she did so many of the songs that she recorded and so many of the songs that she wrote. And this is indicative of the kind of conscientious activist artist that Nina Simone was in her time. And she was truly unapologetic, and she was more for the by any means necessary civil rights activism and protest. And she was in solidarity with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, basically. And this song is on this mix because it is representative of an artist who was not afraid to step outside of what would be comfortable for her back then, for the good of her career, in order to say, enough is enough. I'm Black in this racist America. I'm going to stand up for not only my rights, but everyone else's rights. And if my career suffers for it, if, you know, my money suffers for it, I don't give a shit. This next song is Tracy Chapman's Talking About a Revolution. this song is, you know, one of many songs that Tracy Chapman has penned to discuss and to highlight and to really express her feelings and frustrations around just injustice and around the inequality of people's lives. And this song really is a call to the very thing this generation of people is calling for. That's revolution. That's the structural change. That is the dismantling of a system and rebuilding it in our own image. She says, run, 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 run. And it, to me, that really means you need to run to the future. Actually, this is funny because Bernie Sanders actually used this as the unofficial theme and anthem for his 2016 presidential campaign. So it really is something that I think a lot of people, young people now too, are discovering. Tracy Chapman's voice is a unique one, and it's one of the most memorable, and it stuck with me when I first heard it. So I think this song really kind of is self-explanatory. It is A Tribe Called Quest's We the People, and it is a single off of their album, We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. And this was released in 2016, I believe. And it basically is a parody of Donald Trump's presidential campaign when he came out and was saying all that bullshit that he continues to say to this day. And it's basically, this is satirical, kind of like a tear down of the racist rhetoric that Donald Trump engages in. And so let's just listen to it, bro, because it speaks for itself.
My shit's cold. Hands set a bit because I ain't so bold. But yeah, all you black folks, you must go. All of you Mexicans, you must go. And all of you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways.
Before you put on this record, understand, this is for all of my ancestors who were raped, who were killed, and hung because of their plight for freedom and for dignity. They died for me, and they died for you. This is for them to know that, yes, even today in 1992, we are still fired up, and we're still talking about revolution.
This song is Arrested Development's Revolution, which can be found on the soundtrack to the film Malcolm X by Spike Lee. It's very much about, we're about to embark on this revolution, and we're just trying to live our lives and work and take care of our loved ones, and y'all are out here killing us. And this is just kind of indicative of how this is the same cycle as shit. From the Reconstruction to the Jim Crow era to the Civil Rights Movement to the riots in the streets, Malcolm X, you know, all of this is the same shit over and over and over and over again. It's the cycle. It's the same cycle.
Brothers and sisters, let me share with you some news. As I sit on my blessed couch watching the news, there has been a rude awakening that I have marked until my feet have bled. And I have riots to them cold and called the feds. What's left, my conscience said? What's left?
As I look out my window, I see the little ones playing amongst each other with the water guns in pure poverty. Generations of good people and cycles of poverty. It bothers me, so I ask myself, I say, how you doing as much as you can for the struggle?
Thank you.
This song is This Land by Gary Clark Jr., and it is off or the album This Land, which won him, I think it won him 3 Grammys, well-deserved Grammys. That album was amazing. It was fire. And it really was, for me, right up there with Hozier's Wasteland Baby. And I'm really happy to talk about this song because it is an example of connecting the racism of yesterday to the racism of today. Gary's talking about a multitude of things here, but one of the close personal experiences outside of what he went through in his childhood as a dark-skinned black boy living and growing up in the South, and especially someone who plays rock and roll and blues, he bought a home, a farmland with his wife, and white men came to his door and said, "Who are you? And what are you doing here?" And this song is basically his answer. And it's the answer to the larger question that white people ask black people all the time. Why are you here? We don't want you here. And he's basically saying, this is our land too. We belong here. I belong here. So fuck you.
Rest in power. Rest in paradise. If I could change matters, I would spare a life. Cause lives matter, it's clearly nothing as dear as life. You have become a symbol in a spirit life. Rest in power.
So this song is Black Thought's Rest in Power, and it was written and performed for the 6-part docuseries Rest in Power, Trayvon Martin story, right after Trayvon Martin died. I believe it aired in 2018, and you know, the phrase Rest in Power is another thing to say outside of Rest in Peace, because it really does, it leaves room for more hope, but it also sort of communicates anger. It communicates that the people that you left behind are going to continue to fight for you, continue to fight for the life that was stolen for you, fight for justice for you. And Black Thought is an amazing lyricist and MC. He's one of the best. And this really struck me more than any other thing. There's a lot of protest anthems out there, and a lot of them born out of the last 4 or 5 years of unrest in this country around police brutality and sanctioned murder. But this one is one of the more poignant ones, and it speaks loud, clear for itself. So this song is Hell You Talkin' 'Bout. It was actually written by Janelle Monae and her Wonderland Artist Collective, including Jadina. And this is the David Byrne version that he performed in during his show for American Utopia, which is, that's a now filmed performance. It's a movie, it's a Spike Lee joint that's on HBO Max right now, so just check it out, it's really good. But basically, this song is calling out the names of the victims of police brutality, black men and women who were murdered in this country over the last few years. And it's a protest anthem. She wrote it back in 2015, I believe. And she had the song on her Electric Lady album. And there is a shorter version of it on a re-release. And there's also an instrumental out there for anybody to put their own sort of lyrics and spin on it, basically, just to use it as the anthem that it was meant to be. But this is the David Byrne version, and it's a live recording of it. So I think it's more bombastic, I guess I want to say about it. But yeah.
I've been low, I've been high, I've been so.
So this is Black Man in a White World by Michael Kiwanuka, and he is a British pop star from the UK of Ugandan descent. He writes music that very much sort of explores what it's like to be someone who lives in between worlds as a black man who is, you know, looked at as a foreigner in the UK and looked at as a foreigner in Uganda. And this song in particular sort of calling out, noticing that one particular demographic usually shows up to his shows, and that's white people. And if there are any black people there, there aren't very many. And he's sort of questioning whether or not, you know, that's indicative of the society at large, how divided we are, basically. And it's sort of picked up steam in the last few years because that phrase, "I'm a black man in a white world," is something that is repeated constantly on the song, and it sticks out because it can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people in this day and age. Though I think what it really means is, as a black man in a white world, especially someone who has feet in both worlds, as far as the way people perceive me and treat me, it's a special kind of place to be when you are unwanted on all fronts. And it's not confrontational, it's not angry, it's just asking why. This song is pretty self-explanatory. It is "I Can't Breathe" by Her. And she's basically saying the words of the Eric Garners and the George Floyds of this country and the world, really. Asking why. And basically letting white people know, this isn't about us, it's about you. It's about you and your inability to let us live. She's basically asking here, how do we get to the point where our suffering and death is being met with silence and indifference? You know, why are we still to the point where black people are not seen as human, and so there is no empathy to be had for us and what's being done to us? And this is R&B and spoken word, and it's very powerful.
Stuck in despair, these wild thoughts running through my mind. Got my body destined for electric.
This last track we're going to look at is captured on an iPhone by Dre of Kool & Dre. Out of all the things that we consider to be catalysts for revolution, having the death of a black man captured on an iPhone by the steady hand of a black woman as a police officer kneeled on that man's neck for almost 9 minutes until he was dead. This is happening again. The fact that this is 2020 and the only difference from lynchings and Rodney King is an iPhone.
Can we all just get along? We supposed to be kings, they beat us with batons. Not guilty, that's the verdict. How when we all witnessed the murder? Trying to ease my mind watching verses. Turn the news on, they showing scenes of the hearses.
Damn. George Floyd was a man, a black man in his 40s, who died at the hands of Minneapolis police last night. I have to warn you, this video is hard to watch.
So what was the first protest song that you became aware of?
It's cliche as fuck, but probably Fight the Power. Or the revolution will not be televised. Talking about me personally, if I were to be aware of what a protest song was, it would be either Fight the Power or the revolution will not be televised. And both of those, though belonging to different eras, are cultural embeds. You know them and you know what they mean. And, you know, I think the revolution will not be televised had the most impact on me. But Fight the Power, now that I'm older, that definitely makes me feel the most solidarity with it, because I definitely, like, I'm fed the fuck up. I'm, You know me. I follow the rules. I'm a law-abiding citizen. But I'm tired. Like, I'm tired of these fucking cops.
Like, shouting at white folks in the street for no reason, tired, and just like...
I'm just like, I'm... Well, you know, the election's coming up, so... I'm really like, yo, if the shit go the wrong way, like, I might be out in the streets. I might be out here in these streets.
I'm gonna find me in an abandoned school or something. Hunker down. lock that bathroom door in the basement.
Bathroom door. Okay.
So for me, it was "Strange Fruit" by Nina Simone, and I don't know that this is actually classified as a quote unquote protest song, but it was certainly one of the first songs that I'd ever heard that sort of just really painted this haunting, bleak, sad, you know, saddening and maddening picture of the aftermath of a horrible racist act that takes a life, that happened so many times to so many people during the years after the slaves were freed, and, you know, lynching, and having her beautiful voice give voice to the dead, barren aftermath of that. You know, she's talking about this as if it's, you know, dead fruit hanging from a tree. The vivid picture that I got in my mind when I was like, I think I was in high school, I was like a freshman in high school when I first heard this song, was that when she said black body swinging, I automatically thought, well, you know, I know what a rotten peach looks like. I know what an apple looks like once it's been exposed to the elements and it's fallen from the tree. And if you compared it to what a body might look like after it's been burned or stabbed or lynched, you know, I just couldn't get those images out of my mind. And I couldn't stop trying to figure out why anyone would wish that, let alone perform that on another human being. Like, what causes such hatred and anger and energy and force of will that's what you're willing to do to another human being, and not only do it, but celebrate it and feel glee when it's done. Yeah, so that was, I call it, maybe it's not protest music, but it certainly was the first music I'd heard that sparked this rage in me about the injustice of racism.
No, I think it is protest music specifically for that reason, because it is a record of that kind of atrocity. And it's not, I'm going to stay quiet and keep my head down and not talk about this and let it happen. I'm going to write a song that is sad in tone, has language in it that may not call directly lynching into the forefront, but that any black person, especially, who's listening to this song, when I describe to you black body swinging, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't think there was any doubt what the intention of the song was.
Yeah, so that to me is, it is, oh, yeah, a form is of protest, yeah. You know. And the fact that it's, that there are people who are being mysteriously hung after participating in protests and unrest all around this country, you know, it, thanks to social media now we know about it. And so black bodies are still swinging.
So growing up, seeing things like Rodney King, who died in 2012, by the way, what did you think at the time, or what did you believe at the time? And was there any music that you're aware of that put it in context for you?
Yeah, so that's where Fight the Power and Fuck the Police, NWA's Fuck the Police, that's where those things directly preceded that whole situation. So both NWA and Public Enemy were telling people, this is the way it is, this is what they're doing, and fuck them. And then almost immediately after, I think it was like maybe a year or two after these releases, this thing happens to this man, and it's, somebody catches it on videotape. We were six at the time, so I wasn't too aware of what was going on. But after the fact, I think the most impactful thing for me is realizing that even after that happened, even after NWA and the Public Enemy and those guys were raising awareness, and after, it seems like you have this moment where finally somebody gets this shit on tape and it's proof positive that the police are doing this. And even after that bullshit ass, you know, letting these guys off the hook, these terrorist police officers off the hook, and the city went nuts. Like, So even after that, to come to 2020, to come to, you know, even 2015 and on, when more of this type of thing is getting caught on tape, and still these police officers are getting let off the hook, and these everyday white citizens are getting let off the hook for attacking and murdering black people, it just makes me realize that we can write songs, we can record them. I don't know what the fuck it's going to take to get that to stop in this country. So what's something you recently learned about protest music and the way that protest music has evolved?
I guess that it's still happening, that it's still being made, and that contemporary
artists are still crafting music that speaks to a particular moment. And I think I became really aware of it, like when, I know this is going to sound silly, when, you know, Beyonce did Beachella, and she opened it with what I didn't realize at the time, but now I'm fully aware, is the Negro National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. And, you know, it was written a really fucking long time ago, and it was adopted to be the anthem by the NAACP. And I, you know, for whatever reason, just didn't know that until I was like, oh, what is this song? It was so, she sang it so beautifully, and the reaction from the crowd and just from, you know, people on social media, it just made me aware. I mean, I was already aware that, you know, injustice was still, is still a thing, of course, but it made me aware that despite what people think about, you know, millennials and pop culture and music for, from the last like decade or so, it is deeper and can be deeper, and artists have something more to say than people give them credit for. And I think that's obviously more apparent now than it was then, even. But yeah, you know, I don't know, Queen B, she put me on again.
I think something that I learned just from researching to do this episode was that gospel music and spirituals were the root of what you call protest music in the era they began, the civil rights movement. And it's something that you sort of are vaguely aware of, because earlier versions of what you call protest music is basically gospel music. It started as a way to inject positivity and love into the movement, because all of these movements started in churches, basically. And it was led by Black evangelicals and Christians who were saying, you know, lead with love. And so they would sing gospel music to combat the unrest and unease people felt at risking their lives and their livelihoods in order to fight for equality, because a lot of people were scared to do that, to step out of line, to step out of place. Mm. And in a lot of situations, it was used just to pass the time and make what they were doing or about to do more bearable. And it's kind of like parallel to what spirituals did for slaves in the field, like what I was talking about earlier, where you sing this music to take your mind off the fact that you are basically having to risk your life every day just to live a life as a person, as a human being. And coming out of just gospel music, a lot of gospel acts went mainstream pop and started singing secular music, or turned their gospel anthems into secular protest anthems, so that their messaging would get a broader audience, reach a broader audience. So a jazz musician like Nina Simone could write a song that would be potentially played on the radio, although she got a lot of, you know, she lost a lot when she started to sing about Black struggle and Black uprising. But I didn't realize the connective tissue between gospel music to secular protest music before I started looking into it. So that was something that I was happy to see.
Yeah, that's a good point. You think about, you know, a lot of R&B singers and stuff are still heavily influenced, I think, by, you know, the church, and you know, that's where they get there. That's where their voices develop. So what's a favorite artist or artists from an era, not just from civil rights era, but, you know, maybe more towards the present or just any era? Well, you felt the music just was, I mean, music, a lot of all music mostly is inherently political, but where it was really sort of intensely, intently, purposefully, out loud political.
This might be controversial, but I think someone like Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, Here's why. Their music in and of itself is not political. Like we've said before, I'm going to put political in quotations here, because I mean, it's not a platform. You know what I mean? It's not like here, it's not trying to sway an opinion. So it's not political in the traditional sense. It doesn't call out a hard knock life in a way meant to raise awareness. And it's mostly sexual and kind of braggadocious in nature, which, you know, a lot of hip hop is. That's hip hop. However,
yeah, but for women, though,
I think that they're being unapologetically exactly who they are as Black and Afro-Latina women. One of them is bisexual. They might both be bisexual, but I'm going to say one of them is out as a bisexual. And they are both sexually carefree. They both have huge platforms, and they have chosen to speak to people sort of on their level about politics and social issues in a way that they know how. And this is outside of their music. So their music is what popularizes them. And then they take their personalities and they use who they are inherently as people to talk about politics and bring awareness to politics. So this is something like Cardi B talking about taxes and, you know, using the popularity of that to go and talk to politicians like Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden about taxes. And Megan Thee Stallion going through what she went through on a very public platform and taking all that flack and almost being vilified about what happened to her. And using that to talk about the way Black women are treated and speaking out against the violence against Black women like she suffered, but also someone like Breonna Taylor, who still to this day probably won't ever see justice for her murder. You know, she just did a performance on SNL where the song she was singing, she punctuated that with saying basically the justice system is shit and it treats Black women especially like shit. But she's also, you know, before that, she advocates for climate change reform. You know, like she'll do a beach cleanup party or something like that. And like she's always done stuff like that. And it's sort of incidental to her music, but she's able to talk about these other issues. And so these are empowered women, in my opinion. People might not share that opinion. And I feel like they are leading their own sort of revolutionary movements. They're not letting people tell them that they can't talk about these issues because, you know, they dress scantily and their music is predominantly about sex. They are flawed. They are imperfect individuals, just like we all are. But they still take the time to do something for people other than themselves. And so I like that.
Yeah, I mean, all good points. And I agree that, well, just by virtue of the fact that they are powerful women and the fact that they're women of color and the fact that they're unapologetic about who they are, that in its very nature is political, especially in this climate where, you know, we're still dealing with rape culture and we're still dealing with both misogyny and misogynoir. And we all know what the fuck that is. And if you don't, look it up. But I think that one of my favorite musical eras for political music, especially hip hop music, is the 90s, man. Whenever I hear the music that they made back then and in many ways that they're still making, it just, I don't know, there's just something about that music. Even still today, the things that they talked about was so enlightening, and they really spoke to me as a Black girl growing up in the 90s, trying to figure out who I was and why I was starting to get so frustrated with the world, because, you know, the world was creeping in. Like, I was starting to, you know, from watching what happened with the beating of Rodney King, and then, you know, you grow up and you hear this music and you hear, you know Lauryn Hill and the Fugees and the Roots asking you questions about, you know, whether or not you're just sort of blindly accepting the world as it's given to you, or whether or not you can sort of see it for what it really is. And that's why I appreciate that music. And I think people like Kendrick, you know, a lot of people continue that tradition. It's just, there's so much other noise out there right now. I think back then it was easier for that kind of music to become very sort of in your face. It was like everywhere for a time, you know, from Arrested Development to, like, even, you know, Janet Jackson was doing it. Like, everybody was doing it. Fucking they don't really care about us came out, and you get Heal the World and, you know, all this stuff. Like, that kind of music really, really in the 90s, really, I think, blew the hell up. Because maybe in the 90s it was considered a popular thing to be quote unquote politically correct and, you know, care about your fellow man. And, you know, so yeah, that I love that era, the 90s era, especially for what I call protest music. So a couple of weeks after Black is King dropped, shout out to Beyonce and Black is King, still watching that on repeat, Kamala Harris got tapped by Joe Biden to be the next VP. Okay, firstly, are we hopeful? Secondly, what do we think the music will have to say in generations to come about this moment?
As far as the Kamala Harris pick, I'm cautiously optimistic. I know a lot of the newer generation do not see Kamala Harris or Joe Biden, quite frankly, as being revolutionary at all. They see them as upholding the status quo. Mm-hmm. This generation really wants to dismantle the system completely and not build it back the way it was. They want to remake it entirely. And I think the next generation will be instrumental in pushing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to the left. But also they will be focused on local governance, community organizing, and House and Senate races. I think that they are very smart and savvy about that. So I'm hopeful because I know that the generation behind us and the generation behind them, I know they got that. You know, they are going to be the ones running for office to replace the status quo, to replace Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So they're not going to leave it up to centrists like them. I think that more artists in general, especially Black artists, are more comfortable now with setting aside their love affair with capitalism, because for a minute there, getting rich was kind of the forefront of people's minds. But I mean, you know, like the conscious rappers and shit, they were still very underground. The people who just made party anthems and were rocking about bling and all that shit, they were the ones making all the money.
I mean, it didn't used to be like that, but it started.
No, it didn't used to be like that, but
becoming like that. Yeah,
for a long time it was. And I feel like for a long time, I mean, we still got those holdouts. We still got, you know, Kanye West, but he got a mental problem. God bless his heart. Now we got people like Ice Cube, you know, like, so we have people out there who are putting capitalism before social sort of progress. But there are a lot more people right now willing to put that on the line to speak up and speak out in a way that is for the Black people on the ground and not, you know, not be in their ivory towers in their proximity to whiteness and, you know, counting their money and shit like that. I think that their instincts to protect their bag by staying silent in favor of speaking out and aligning themselves with progressive political movements is, you know, people are doing that more and more.
I'm hopeful. I would rather at this moment in time where everything is fucking on fire and we ain't got no jobs and you know, like I want the hell to end. I want to escape the hellscape. And if that means that we have a couple of cornballs.
So you're talking about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden.
I'm not saying that like they're not our saviors.
No, but
I'm
not.
Hoping that
they're
they'll be. Yes. I'm hoping that we will be able to push them, like you were saying, into the area that we need for them to be so that they can start getting shit done. And it's not just about them. Okay, it's about everybody else surrounding this election. It's about fucking all of the little tiny positions that you think are tiny that you don't pay any fucking attention to around your county, around your state, the Senate. The fucking Senate. We've got to flip the Senate. Do you guys know how many goddamn bills the Democrats have tried to pass? Hundreds over the last 4 years to help us with the shit that we asked for. And do you know how many fucking Mitch McConnell has fucking held up with no vote? All of them.
Yeah, I think that the generation behind us have really, they got that on lock. I think that I am happy for the women of color, you know, Black and Asian women who see the future in Kamala. You know, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic. And as far as the music is concerned, I feel like art, and it will take many forms, and it'll be both subtle and it'll be aggressive. Music, I believe, will be at the forefront of that because it has the ability to reach and resonate with the most people. I feel like I feel like protest music will take as many forms as it's already taken, and as many people will get involved with making sure that if not for nothing else, they're going to put pen to paper and tell the story of what's going on in their neighborhoods and in this country. So I really feel like we got to get the winged beast out of the office, but that's not the only foe that we have to defeat. And so as long as there's, you know, racism and white supremacy at the systemic root of this country, then there will be artists who are making protest music to go along with the ongoing movement.
That'll be the test when we look back, you know, however many decades from now, the music that we made, that'll be one of the ways that we can I think, hopefully see the truth in the history. So, yeah. I don't know, man. Y'all need a motherfucking vote. Shit.
Voting and participating in the democratic process are key. The vote is the most powerful nonviolent change agent you have in a democratic society. You must use it because it is not guaranteed. You can lose it. You must also study and learn the lessons of history because humanity has been involved in this soul-wrenching existential struggle for a very long time. People on every continent have stood in your shoes through decades and centuries before you. The truth does not change, and that is why the answers worked out long ago can help you find solutions to the challenges of our time. Continue to build union between movements stretching across the globe, because we must put away our willingness to profit from the exploitation of others. Though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I have done all I can to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring. When historians pick up their pens to write the story of the 21st century, let them say that it was your generation who laid down the heavy burdens of hate at last, and that peace finally triumphed over violence, aggression, and war. So I say to you, walk with the wind, brothers and sisters. And let the spirit of peace and the power of everlasting love be your guide.
Holy shit! That's it for this episode.
I don't even think that was enough, to be honest.
It definitely wasn't enough. But in our next episode, we're going to be getting back to those mixtapes I made for Hozier.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm going to just wrap up the story. What happened with those tapes? You know, I don't think it's a spoiler that they did not make it to Hozier. But I think the events of the night that I tried to bless my little old heart, I tried to get those tapes to that boy. So we're going to wrap that up, and we're going to go through the rest of the tapes and listen to the music from those. The next one is actually one of my favorite mixtapes in the original set, and that is Driving Down Black Pavement, The Magic Hour.
Ooh, what's the magic hour?
The magic hour is the hour when the sun is setting and everything goes from pink to purple and the transition from day's end to true night. you know, imagine what you listen to at that hour while you're cruising down an endless stretch of black road. That's the idea behind that tape.
Nice. All right. Well, stay tuned for that. Until next time.